Welcome to Trust the Badge. In this episode, I interview Mr. Andre Kerwin, who graduated from Stanford University, competed in professional football, and is currently a licensed NFLPA and CFLPA sports agent. Mr. Kerwin and I have an extraordinary conversation of his experiences with law enforcement as we discuss his perspective and understanding as a community member. We will begin with an introduction of Mr. Kerwin.
My name is Andre Kerwin. I live here in Tampa, Florida, ex-professional athlete turned serial entrepreneur. I'm in the mortgage industry where I do residential lending, also a partner in a mezzanine lending fund here in Tampa, and then also a licensed NFLPA and CFLPA certified sports agent. So, and minority owner in a local vodka and gin company. So I'm kind of a jack of all trades.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Kerwin. I really appreciate your time. To start off, can you tell me about your personal experiences or interactions with law enforcement, both positive and negative?
Yeah, sure. And first of all, allow me to begin by saying, Jaser, this is, you know, something that is tremendous, you know, for you to be doing at this such a young age, to be tackling issues like this and having these discussions. I really believe that bridging the gap sometimes that we find between police as well as the community, it's conversations like this where healing takes place and understanding takes place. And I think a lot of times people fear what they don't understand. And so it's, you know, for you to be such a young age and, you know, taking this head on and having such a concern, it's tremendous and it's refreshing to see. So I commend you and I congratulate you on that. So
thank you so much. I really appreciate the words.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So jumping into my circumstances and situations with law enforcement have, I would say on the whole, have been overwhelmingly positive, right? I've got a lot of friends that are at all different levels of police force here, as well as in Canada, actually across the world. Deputy Chief of the Tampa Police Department, Calvin Johnson's a dear friend of mine. Chad Cronister, he was the head sheriff here at Hillsborough County in Tampa, is a dear friend of mine. And I've got nothing besides positive to say on police force as a whole. So a lot of the interactions that I've had while I was playing professionally, even in the collegiate level, doing a lot of different social engagements, as well as charity events where you're supporting law enforcement and officers, fallen officers, doing speaking engagements alongside, you know, police officers. I've spoken at detention centers, prisons during my playing days. So a lot of it has been overwhelmingly positive. You know, a couple of different times where I've had, first of all, I've never been arrested, never been seen in the back of a police car or a cell. And I want to keep it that way. You know, I just try to live my life in a way that knows every knock on my door and say, sir, can you come with me? I think that's very important. And I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, on a whole, people are good. I want to believe in the positive nature of people, but unfortunately there's people out there that just, you know, can't seem to get it straight and stay on the straight and narrow. And, you know, the recidivism is just, you know, a part of their nature. So there has to be some police force out there that's instituting justice. For me, a couple of different situations that I've had personally with police where there were some misunderstandings. I can think of one time I was here in Tampa. My girlfriend and I at the time had gone out. It was late. We're driving home. And I just pulled out and I wasn't speeding. I wasn't doing anything wrong. I pulled out of a restaurant parking lot. And within seconds, there was like a dark, unidentified vehicle behind me. And next thing you know, some lights went on. I was like, I was an undercover cop. So I pull into the parking lot and he's like, license and registration. So I hand him my license and registration and he left and he comes back and he looked at me. He looked at my girlfriend at the time and he says to her, ma'am, are you okay? And as soon as he said that, I kind of had a feeling I knew where it was headed, but she was just like, why would you assume that I'm not? And he was just like, I just want to make sure that you're here on your own accord. Well, wow. as soon as he said that, I knew it was probably not going to end well because she went off and, you know, she's blonde hair, blue eyed. I obviously am not. And I could tell where the conversation went when he looked at me, looked at her and kind of was suspicious. Right. And so that's one thing that kind of shocked people. Another time I was playing professionally in the CFL in Ottawa and I had a big blacked out Lincoln Navigator with 24 inch rims on it and dark tinted windows. People dark tint their windows here in Florida, right? And I shipped my truck up there during the season. Right. Literally, Jaser, literally 3 or 4 times I was getting pulled over per week. And not speeding, just cops get as soon as I came to expect it, right? I'd have cops pull up behind me, and next thing you know, I'm getting flashed, and I'd pull over, and there'd be, you know, license and registration, and I'd be like, why am I being pulled over? And I'm extremely respectful to cops, you know, in this day and age especially. It's a thankless job, right? I mean, to imagine your father and I don't worry about getting shot at, getting cussed at, getting yelled at, getting, you know, run from when we go to work, right? It's just taken for granted that we're going to make it to where we need to go, and we're going to make it home at night. And when you look at some of the things that these police officers face, like two of my best friends in the world are, one of them is OPP, Ottawa Provincial Police, Kelly Wilshire, and the other one is Darren Joseph, who's Ottawa Police Department. And I've heard stories from them about how they get treated, how they're cussed out, what they're called, the, you know, the words that are used to describe them in their presence. And it's disgusting. And to constantly be under that barrage, to think that any interaction you have could be your last, it's terrifying, you know? And so I get it, you know, and I think that's where a lot of this misunderstanding between the citizens and the police comes up, because you fear what you don't understand. And so going back to my situation in Ottawa, where I kept on getting pulled over, you know, no one could ever explain to me why I was getting pulled over. So it got to the point where I started to feel a certain type of way. I'm like, why do I keep on getting pulled over? This is insane. Law-abiding citizen. I'm up there as a professional athlete playing ball on TV on the weekends or during the week and stuff. And so finally, we had an event, and there was some head-ups of the Ottawa Police Department there. And I pulled one of the guys and said, listen, I need to talk to you guys because this is insane. I keep on getting pulled over 2-3 times a week. It could be morning, afternoon, evening, and I don't understand, right? And so they asked me like what kind of car I drove and this and that, and it was big blacked out Lincoln Navigator. And now in retrospect, there were no other navigators around that city at that time, especially not with dark tinted windows and big rims, right? And so I guess on that standard, it was a little bit flashy. I'm not a flashy person in general, but for that country and that city, it was flashy at the time. And he sat me down and he explained to me, he's like, look, I'm going to put kind of like in regards to an APB, an all points bulletin in the system, basically saying who you are, that you're here as a professional athlete, because I had Florida license plates. And basically what he told me was I fit the description / profile of people that were running drugs across the border, and they call them sleds, right? Big SUVs, you know, fancy SUVs and that kind of thing. Especially I had out of country plates. So they're like, my apologies, it won't happen again. And literally from that time that that note was put in the system and went, you know, citywide, never got pulled over again. And I get it. Like, but you know, these are and these are just personal stories to me, right? In no way, shape, or form do I think that, you know, cops are bad or anything like that. In any industry, you've got bad apples, right? I mean, I don't care if it's
absolutely right,
if it's finance, if it's restaurateur, if it's, you name the industry, banking, whatever, you're going to have people that just don't get it and don't have the same ethics and morals and values that we do. But that doesn't mean you throw the baby out with the bathwater and typecast the whole industry of people into one setting, right? And that's what I believe. Like, I'm just giving you personal situations and circumstances that have happened to me. I went to Stanford University out in Palo Alto, California, extremely rich community. Was there on a full scholarship. I was a pre-med biology major. I had a little Toyota Celica at the time. Once again, being from Florida, had Florida plates. My parents shipped it out there when I was an undergrad, dark tinted windows. And I was taking a friend of mine home in this really nice neighborhood. And, you know, it's an extremely affluent community in that area. And I was leaving and I got pulled over and I'm like, okay, just stop, open the license registration. And they're like, what, you have Florida plates? I'm like, yeah, I'm here on a scholarship to play for Stanford. And he's like, are you lost? I'm like, no, I'm bringing a friend of mine home. He's like, well, what was the address that you were going to? I was like, I don't even know the address. He's like, well, I thought you were bringing a friend home. I'm like, I was, but they're in the car next to me. I'm bringing them home. I don't know their address. They told me how to get here and now I'm leaving. I'm just going to retrace my steps and go home. So there was this whole line of questioning. He's like, well, you just look like you're out of place in this neighborhood, right? Which I understand what he's implying. And you know, one of the things I kind of enjoy going against the mold in regards to bucking societal constructs and the way they view potential people that are minorities, right? And it's been part of me my whole life. Having gone to Stanford, some people will be like, oh, you went to Stanford in Connecticut? No, I went to the Stanford University in Palo Alto, California, right? And they're like, oh, and I see kind of a push up their face. Like, you know, I when I was in banking, you know, one of the questions you asked was, have I had any circumstances with people within the community? You know, I was meeting with a client and we'd just spoken over the phone and he was a doctor. I went to his office and he was sitting in his office with his back turned towards me and he was finishing up a call. And the nurse was like, just go sit in his office. And when he's done, he'll conduct the meeting. And so the guy spins around and he's like, oh, you're black. And I'm like, I looked at my hands. I said, well, last time I checked, I said, is that a problem? He's like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. And I'm like, well, you said it like that. So let's talk about it. Right. And he was just like, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. He's like, I just, I've had like all these conversations with you. And here I was thinking that you weren't black. I'm like, well, why would you think that? He's like, well, you don't sound black. And I said, what exactly does it mean to sound black? Right. And so right. He kind of stuttered around it. And, you know, so it's just, once again, I enjoy kind of going against the standards in regards to what people might think it means to be of a certain ethnicity or race. But those are kind of some of the circumstances I've had on the questionable side. But, you know, I'd say overwhelming, they've been all positive. And I'm a huge supporter of the police. And I think people should be. Like I said before, there's bad apples in every crowd. And it's not just contained to the police.
Thank you for your words. I find it really interesting because I think you're one of few people that actually go to the police department and actually communicate with them what's going on, that you have an issue, right? You've been pulled over many times by the same police department or the same issue that was your car. You went to them, you talked to them, and they explained to you what they thought it was and they apologized. You got the situation fixed. I find that really interesting because today, I believe that many people, they would be pulled over by the cops, whether it's once or many times, and then they'll immediately create the stereotype in their head that, oh man, they just hate me because of whatever the reason it is, right? I'm really glad that you're very open-minded and you're very interested in like what's actually going on and why they're pulling you over. So thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, when you look at the circumstances, every single interaction that's out, like it, think about it, you leave your house whatever time your shift is, you're out on the street, sometimes alone at dark. In every opportunity that you have where you have to pull somebody over is a potential situation that could be life-threatening for that person. That's a lot of stress. That's a lot of pressure, right? And that's a lot of pressure and stress that the average human being does not face on a daily basis, you know? And so anytime I've ever been pulled over, it's yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, 100% of the time. And so I really do feel like the community, because of that inherent sometimes distrust, and some people have, not me. A lot of times I think people have ability to make their situations worse, right? By, you know, automatically saying, oh man, I pulled me over, this and that, and they get attitude. You know, I've seen it. I've been in cars with people when they get pulled over. I'm like, 95% of that interaction could have been avoided by your attitude, you know? And also like if, you know, going back to some people can't necessarily get their situations or their lives together and break the law or repeat offenders. And, you know, if they're in this compromising situation and run, bad things happen when you put yourself in a situation where something is left for interpretation. Like, what are your intentions? You know, in this, now granted, not all circumstances are like that. You know, I think about the George Floyd situation, the Philando Castile situation, the Trayvon Martin situation. Now, Trayvon Martin, you know, George Zimmerman was not a cop, right? You know, but when, for example, when the Philando Castile thing happened and the George Floyd thing happened, I've got two things to say on that. First and foremost was after the Philando Castile situation happened where, you know, he told the cop that he's like, hey, I'm a licensed concealed weapons permit carrier and I have a gun in the car. And the cop asked him to get his license and registration. He was going to reach for something. He's like, don't reach. But he's going to get something. I've told my parents numerous times, look, I don't care what neighborhood I'm in. I don't care what the circumstances are. When I get pulled over, I kind of feel like I want to roll my window down, put my hands out the window, leave my keys in my hand and just ask to be detained, right? Like I would like to be handcuffed because I don't want any misinterpretation for anything that I might reach for to be misconstrued I am a concealed weapons permit carrier, right? And so I would feel more comfortable for my situation and their situation if I'm being detained, because I don't want there's a lot of times fear where there's misunderstanding. And so I want to do everything in my power to make sure that there's no misunderstandings, because I keep my registration in my glove compartment. Sometimes my wallet's in my console, right? And so I don't want there to be any type of misinterpretation where something escalates. It's like, oh, I thought he was reaching for something. No, I'm reaching for what you asked me for. So here, put them on me. Let me step out of the car and you can do whatever you want, because I just remove any potential for error, you know, because it's a high pressure situation, you know, depending on the circumstances.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you realize that that's a situation today. And of course, the last thing you want is to escalate a situation with an officer. That could go really badly, especially if you don't know where you are, what the officers are like. I really understand that you have a good trust with law enforcement. You understand that yes, there are bad apples. However, what do you believe are the biggest barriers to trust between the community and law enforcement, let's say in our area?
So, you know, one of my previous neighbors is a Caucasian police officer. And when he was starting with the police department detachment he was with, he was in the inner city. And we're talking about, you know, race relations. And this was at the height of the boiling point in this country of race relations. And he said, you know, Andre, a lot of times when I drive in the neighborhood in my police car, people scatter, right? And no matter how pure my intentions are, even if I'm just patrolling a neighborhood, people scatter and kind of look at me like I'm the enemy. And I think bridging those gaps one conversation at a time, and it starts with education. During the George Floyd case, well, actually, before they got to a case, before there were any arrests, there was a boiling point in this country. There were riots all across the country. To me, rioting is never the answer. But there are riots all over the country. And I know some stuff happened here in Tampa. And I was called by numerous community leaders about putting together a task force led by community, you know, members of the community to try to intervene, right? So you asked me, what do I think is the answer? Defunding the police? Absolutely not. And I know we're going to get to that. But I really feel like there should be some community liaisons where, here's where the distrust comes. If every time, not every time, but if a majority of time an officer is going into a certain part of town is for an arrest or an interrogation or some potential negative outcome for the citizens in that community, then inherently when the popo shows up, it's like, uh-oh, somebody did something, what's going on, right? And I think there needs to be, you know, like for example, my friend Calvin Johnson, who's African-American. He does different community outreach programs. All of these police detachments do amazing community outreach programs. And I think it's consistency, showing up, being there at times when it's just to go shoot hoops or, you know, do a barbecue. And when I was contacted by different city leaders about doing this, you know, like an intervention, like a community type citizen intervention during these highly volatile times, it was more about getting the community together and having a group where, if something happens and there is a George Floyd-esque situation here in our community, that community group is activated to go into different communities and say, hey, look, they're looking into it. This is what happened. These are the circumstances. We're praying for a great, you know, a good outcome. Hopefully it's not, you know, nothing foul play, but stay calm. We're going to get to the bottom of this and really have that day-to-day rapport, where it's not just in a time of crisis, all of a sudden, you know, everything goes AWOL. And so I think it's constant contact, it's constant discussion, and it's conversations like this, right? Where, you know, right. I remember when we were talking, you're like, wow, you know, when I was telling you some of the things that I've lived through, you're like, wow, I never thought of that, because you just know me, you know, my heart, you know, I have pure intentions, and I'm not going to put myself in a situation that is going to be brought on by me, but sometimes depending on the circumstances, I could be in a situation just by driving, right? And kind of going back to that case of me not wanting to reach for anything in my car. So I think it's just constant communication, outreach, and really bridging the gap to understand that cops take an oath to protect and serve, right? And that's a special person that takes that oath. You know, I couldn't do it. I don't want to be in a situation where when I leave at night, you know, am I going to potentially get shot or not make it home? I have a tremendous amount of respect because it's a high pressure situation and it can be a dangerous situation, you know? So I always go out of my way to thank officers for their service because a lot of times, especially in this day and age, it can be a thankless position.
Thank you. Yeah, that's actually, I want to mention that real quick because today, in today's world, especially, I don't see many, I guess, as frequent thank yous. And it's not a thing that everyone should do. It's not everything that everyone has to do. But it's always good to just go out. And if you see a police officer, just say thank you. Just, you know, appreciate them for what they're doing. Because right now, police recruitment and retention is at a very low point in many big cities. In cities like the LAPD, Chicago, in those big cities, they currently have a very hard time recruiting police officers simply because police officers over there aren't respected as much as they used to be. So thank you for doing that. It's just a really good thing. It's a really good habit to have as well. So next, just what have you witnessed any successful initiatives or efforts aimed at improving police community relations? And if so, what made them effective?
Yeah. And so I think it starts with organic intentions, right? Once again, interfacing the community with police officers in positive situations. So going back to my friend, Calvin Johnson, Deputy Johnson, he has a different program, community outreach programs where they're getting haircuts for children in the inner city, where you want to reinforce, especially to younger age demographics, that not all police officers are bad, right? And get some positive interactions where you should feel like, you know, you don't want to have an inherent distrust for a police officer. Those are who's supposed to protect you, right? And so I think it's just really about positive interactions. And I'm seeing a lot of community outreach programs where police officers are going into communities like the Police Athletic League. They're doing, you know, some different programs that I've been involved in where, you know, they'll do some like community basketball games where, you know, police officers are playing against the general public. And it's just, you got to be in high touch situations other than when there's contentious situations. You want to be in a situation where when a cop drives into a neighborhood, you don't automatically default to, oh my gosh, what's going on? It's just, I think it's somewhat natural. You know, like I can be driving down the street and if a cop gets in behind me, I'm like, I didn't do anything. Like, why is he behind me? You know, like it's just a natural instinct, you know? So I always try to wave to cops and that kind of thing and support them because, you know, especially I've got some very dear friends that are police officers at all different levels. And I hear the stories and I hear the disrespect. I hear that I've heard of the name calling. I've heard of the dangerous situations, you know, where people pull weapons on them and fight back. You know, and I always, in all the speaking engagements I do, I always tell the younger kids, never put yourself in a situation where somebody else determines the outcome of whether or not you make it home or not. You have to go above and beyond. And because of some of that inherent, you fear what you don't understand. You know, I think that there was a time in this country not too long ago where minorities didn't trust cops and cops had a hard time trusting minorities. And I think that you have to go above and beyond. Listen, I always want to be judged by the content of my character and not the color of my skin. But I'm not naive to the fact that there's some people out there that don't inherently trust me just because of the way I look. Case in point, this is about 4 or 5 years ago. And the only reason I'm giving you these different situations of monetary value is to kind of paint the picture. I was vice president of a local bank here in Tampa. I was sitting in my office, which overlooks one of the highest rent districts in our greater Tampa Bay area. I left my office and went to Walgreens during a lunch break. And I was in a $100,000 plus vehicle. And like I said, the only reason I'm telling you that is to kind of give you an idea that I'm not a threat. Right. I was in a $1,000 suit, Calvin Klein suit, sitting in a $100,000 plus vehicle. And in the parking lot, broad daylight at noon, in one of the highest price areas of Tampa. And I pull up and I look over in the car next to me. She looked at me. She looked away. She looked at me again, glared at me. She looked away. Then she grabbed her purse. She put it underneath her seat. And then she looked, she didn't look over it, and she just went boop, and locked her door. And then she turned and she glared at me. And so I just sat there. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, it's broad daylight. I'm dressed dressed in a suit and tie. I'm in a $100,000 vehicle, and that's not what I paid for it. But, and you think I'm going to take your purse? And so I waited until she got out and she went inside. And I went inside and I found her. I said, ma'am, I know what you did. And she's like, I didn't do anything. I said, I know what you did. I watched you. I saw you. And I wanted you to know that my office is right there, right? I said, you probably do business with my institution. And I went to Stanford University where I was a pre-med biology major. I'm a retired professional athlete and I'm a vice president of a local bank. I'm in a $100,000 car in broad daylight in a $1,000 suit, and you feel like you have to hide your purse? And she's like, I didn't do that. I said, stop. I said, I saw you, I watched you, and shame on you. And I said, just know that not everybody that you see that looks like me is going to steal your purse. And I walked away. And so I understand very poignantly, and that's probably one of many circumstances like that where, you know, when I was getting ready to take the NFL Players Association licensing exam in Sarasota, once again, downtown Sarasota, high rent district, staying in a hotel. I'd gone downtown to get something to eat the night before the exam. And I was walking back to my hotel room and there was happened to be a Caucasian homeless man walking in front of me. And he was visibly impaired and drunk and like stumbling around. And he was talking to himself and kind of yelling at people. Then they walked by and there was a couple walking towards him. They walked past him, and now I'm probably about 100 yards behind that guy. And now they're coming towards me. And they look up, and they stop. And they're holding hands, and the guy kind of grabs her and, like, brings her closer. And then she does this, like, of her purse, and then they cross the street. And I'm like, this guy was just belligerent and yelling at you and visibly impaired. And you walk past him, but now you see me. And now you're skipping to the other side of the parking of the street. Yeah. Like, and I'm dressed normally, and this guy wasn't. The other guy wasn't, right? And I'm like, whatever, you know, but people don't think those are circumstances where you wouldn't think, because you know me, you know my heart, and you know my background. You know I'm not capable of doing anything to that couple. But sometimes they fear what they don't understand. And so I enjoy circumstances where I get to educate people just like you're doing. And I think it starts with education in terms of putting people together to understand every industry has people that act on a rogue basis. It's not inherent to cops, because 99.9% of them are good.
Thank you for sharing that story. I feel like more stories like these really need to be spread that shapes the perspective of the stereotypes we have today. And of course, I'm sorry that that happened to you, but I'm glad that you were able to confront them. And, you know, just that one conversation will have a huge change in the long run. And today we do see a lot of stereotypes on both sides, law enforcement, community members. It's inherent. You can't stop that. No human is perfect. But the more conversation we have, like you said, the better place we can get to. So thank 100%. You for sharing that. Yeah.
My pleasure.
Yeah. How do you think law enforcement agencies can better understand and address the needs and concerns of the community they serve?
You know, I think some of these questions go hand in hand with each other in regards to really a community awareness for, you know, I think like during that whole time, you know, of some of these previously nationally sensationalized cases, you saw this movement to defund the police, right? And you defund the police and anarchy will rule. It'll be the wild, wild west and a free for all, unfortunately. And so that's definitely not the answer. But I think when you have, you know, honestly, I think the best way to bolster the police departments is education, you know, diversity training. You know, another thing too is mental illness. You know, you can just Google and see on TV certain circumstances where, you know, police have responded and the person might have been, you know, something going on with their mental capacity and them mistaking it for drug impairment or being drunk and bad things end up happening. I just think that training for police is, you know, kind of the contrary to defunding the police. I think more funds should flow to these police departments to get them ample training for compromising situations. You know, I think they should be some of the highest paid people in our community, because you really want to put them in a situation where that risk has some form of a reward other than a pat on the back. You know, it's a lot of times, like we've discussed and we all know, it can be a very thankless job, and it's such a high pressure cooker. And, you know, when you look at some of the rates of suicide amongst people in those types of service positions, it's heartbreaking because you're constantly dealing with high pressure situations and volatile situations, and sometimes people with bad intentions. So I can't imagine being in that type of situation on a daily basis. So I think educating the cops and putting them in scenarios and situations where it's constant training. And I know that they have constant training, but that's a tough answer. Tough question to answer, because I think it's just community awareness and community involvement. And I think if you can get the community comfortable with police showing up other than high pressure situations and doing different community outreach opportunities, you build trust. And I think trust has to be built on both sides. And there again, I think the citizens can do a lot by not overreacting when you are pulled over, you know, or in a situation with a police officer. Give them the respect that, hey, look, every interaction I have with a police officer, if I'm pulled over, I go into it thinking they don't know me. They don't know where I'm from. They don't know my heart. They don't know my intentions, right? And so I have to act accordingly, or else anybody can find themselves in a contentious situation.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. And speaking on the defund the police movement, I'm sure you've seen the after results of what happens from those movements in cities like even a small city in Burlington, Vermont. There was a study not too long ago from Newsweek Global. They showed how there was an increase in crime, mainly because the city wanted to just decrease the police force just by a little bit. But as a result, officers left their jobs voluntarily, and the police force cut almost in half within just a few weeks. And as a result, crime increased and the city didn't know what to do. So they tried to rehire those police officers, but nothing good happened. There are some cities where defund the police, and this is almost every city, but when defund the police movements actually take effect into reforms, we don't see much good happening, just because the police officers themselves, when you don't have them on the streets, that's when it incentivizes more crime. And thank you for touching on that.
No, I've had some young police officers contact me within the last couple months that want to get out of the industry, and they're tired. They're tired of the lack of respect. They're tired of the high pressure. And, you know, it's sad because, you know, the community need this group of people. And like I said before, it can be a very thankless job. And when you're constantly, you know, viewed or potentially looked at as the enemy, when you're trying to be the solution, it can get frustrating. I can totally understand that.
Right.
You know, defunding the police to me is not the answer. If anything, more funding, more training, more awareness, more diversity training, more diversity amongst the police staffs. You know, I think it's important. You know, Mayor Castor here in Tampa is a friend of mine, and, you know, she was previously in TPD. And, you know, there's just so many people near and dear to me that take that oath to protect and serve. And it's sad, you know, but there again, like there's some other people that have, you know, have been on the other side of it that are facing circumstances that they didn't deserve or bring on themselves because of rogue cops, corrupt cops. And I get it, you know, it's, you know, but like I said before, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's in every industry.
You already answered the question that, yes, I guess police officers should be paid more. I was going to ask you, should there be more funding for law enforcement? But I guess just to cover that topic, I would just say that if you have more funding for law enforcement, I think focusing that on training and I guess bias training as well would actually help them, because in today's world, we do see a lot of police officers stereotype and have biases, which we do understand. We've talked about this. But if we have more training that will teach them how to respond appropriately and have good conversation and good connections with the community without any problems, then that'll be really good for sure.
No, absolutely. I agree. And, you know, when I, there was some, you know, if you look at some of the, like, and there were some people that I want to actually introduce you to are some local attorneys here that are criminal defense attorneys, some friends of mine, some old clients. And we've had numerous conversations, and some of them Hispanic, some of them Caucasian, some of them African-American. And we've had conversations in the past about some disparate, you know, disparate treatment and sentencing amongst minorities and that kind of thing. And this is, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know all this stuff. I've done some research on it, having had some of these conversations. And, you know, when you look at some of the numbers in regards to, you know, some of the, like, for example, let's take crack and powder cocaine, right? Crack cocaine is a typically considered a drug of poverty. Powder cocaine is considered a drug of influence, right? More white collar. And if you look at some of the sentencing laws, you know, back in the 1986 and then 2010, there were some reforms. There were 100%, this is called the 100-to-1 ratio. And the mandatory sentence for crack cocaine was 10 years for anyone caught with 50 milligrams, which is equivalent to about the size of a candy bar. When you look at the comparable sentence for those caught with powder cocaine, it was 5,000 milligrams, which was equivalent to get the same sentence of 10 years, it was 5,000 milligrams, which is equivalent to a briefcase full of powder cocaine, right? And so when you look at those disparate sentences and you look at how they disparately affect different demographics, you know, I think some of those issues cause some distrust. But a lot of those things were, you know, they started to realize it and rectify those. And there's some countermeasures taken to kind of level those playing fields. But I think this is a complex situation, and I don't think there's any one answer. You know, unfortunately, you know, the Bible says we're all born with an inherently evil and wicked nature. And, you know, there's forces of evil out there, and we've got to combat them every day. And it's sad because those police are on the front lines of that, and they deal with it on a daily basis. Whereas you and I just, you know, we touch it very seldom, you know, but they're living it, and they're sleeping it, eating it, and breathing it every day. And so a lot of times, unfortunately, they take it home with them in regards to, you know, what it does to their mental. And it's just sad. It's a big issue. And, you know, I actually have some aspirations of potentially running for a public office here in Tampa within the next couple of years. And these are things that I think about all the time.
What message do you have for any current or future law enforcement listening to this interview, and how can they change the perspective of law enforcement in the future?
So my first thing would be to say, be the change that you want to see in other people, and always understand that no matter how frustrated you might be with some circumstances or some people, that there's still good people out there that care, right? My message to police officers would be, we see you and we thank you. We don't come with judgment in regards to who you might be or who people might think you are. And I'm always going to give a police officer the benefit of the doubt until they prove otherwise. And then it's proven otherwise. So I just think that, you know, there again, like I always, every police officer that I see, I always thank them and I always tell them, be careful. Please be careful. And I'm going to, you know, I pray for police officers and law enforcement all the time, because once again, there's people out there that don't have pure hearts and pure intentions, unfortunately, and they've got to watch their back, you know? And so, and also to, you know, the citizens out there, if you see something, say something. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, there's these adages out there that snitches get stitches and, you know, don't be a narc kind of thing. But I just feel like we as community need to take care of each other. And if you see something, say something and be the change that you want to see in other people.
Thank you. And ultimately, as a community, how do we trust the badge? If you could just simplify it, how can the community trust the badge?
Ask questions, you know, in fellowship, break bread with police officers, go support your local police officers, go to city council meetings, go to town hall meetings, you know, be, you know, spend time in your community. You know, one of the things I like to do is, especially when I was playing, I used to go, and I still speak at high schools, junior highs, elementary schools. I used to really make a point to go speak to juvenile detention centers and some prisons to say, hey, look, there is opportunity for change, right? Sometimes good people make bad decisions, and there's hope, there's love, there's no condemnation. If you do the crime, you got to do the time, but, you know, make a difference, right? Be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And I think that's one of the things that as a community, we have to embrace is take care of each other. You know, we live in a day and age where you just turn on the TV and there's so much heartbreak, there's so much sadness. You know, people's lives are difficult enough. You know, it just, you know, you just have to turn on the TV and you see person gunned down in this area or police officer shot or, you know, like it, even as simple as I cringe every time I see people speeding through school zones, you know, like it's just unbelievable to me. Like sometimes carelessness or some people just don't pay attention or what have you. But, you know, even when it comes to putting laws on the books where if a police officer is pulling somebody over or there's like somebody working in a median, get out of the lane that's next to them. You know, it's just, I think it's just awareness. I think it's a lot of it is just being aware. You know, when I think about that situation in Kansas City recently after the Super Bowl celebration and there was a couple gunfight going on and citizens dove in and jumped in and tackled some of the suspects and probably saved lives. You know, it's just crazy sometimes when I sit back and think about where our society's at and some of the things that people are living through on a daily basis. There's enough sadness and heartbreak out here. Let's just take care of each other, love each other, pray for each other, be there for each other, encourage each other. And I think that starts with law enforcement.
And looking forward, what do you hope to see in terms of progress in the relationship between law enforcement and the community? What specifically do you want to see in terms of progress?
You know, I think progress starts with conversations like this. Right. You know, and like, for example, during that George Floyd situation where, you know, I was contacted by community leaders to have a town hall and effectively put together a task force. I just feel like if we don't acknowledge our past, we're bound to repeat it in the words of Martin Luther King. And I think that a lot of times during moments of crisis, everything's on the forefront. It's on the news and the media and don't get me into the media and that kind of thing. But I feel like a lot of times we lose sensitivity to things when we move on in our day-to-day lives. And I think it's one of those things where we can't forget some of these circumstances and we can't wait for the next tragedy or the next misunderstanding. Or, you know, like I look at the Breonna Taylor case where, you know, you've got somebody sleeping in their apartment. And I think from my understanding, like there was a drug suspect and they thought it was her apartment and turned out not to be. And, you know, if somebody comes and breaks into my house at night, whether if it's a cop or not, who knows? I don't know. Right. So at what point in time is somebody standing their ground? You know, like if somebody breaks my front door down at night, I'm going to respond. Right. And what if my house was a mistaken identity for something? So, you know, you just never know. And so I think it starts with trying to see the good in people, trying to educate the public. And a lot of those speaking engagements that I do was always telling young people, younger demographics, you know, it takes a lifetime to build a reputation, but a minute to destroy it, a second to destroy it. And actions have consequences. And you have to live your life according to a way that no one else is going to decide whether or not you make it home or not alive. And I've always tried to live my life that way. And I've always implored the younger demographics to try to think that your actions have consequences. And, you know, don't put yourself in a situation where somebody else gets to decide your fate.
Thank you. And just before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts for me or for our audience?
For you, first and foremost, once again, you know, I commend you for this. This is awesome. And I think what you're doing is amazing. And I think a lot of it starts with awareness and education. And once again, for you at such a young age to have, you know, led this charge and, you know, I think healing takes time and a lot of education. And I think
sure.
it's going to take future leaders of tomorrow, like yourself, to get the ball rolling, because you could be at the gym, you could be hanging out with your friends, you could be at the mall, you know, you could be hanging out with your family, but instead you're spreading awareness. And it's so commendable. And I don't take that lightly. And I don't think the general public should take it lightly, that there's people that care. There's people that care to know both sides. There's people that are going to do what they can to help try to protect those police officers that take these oaths to protect and serve. And there's law-abiding citizens out here that care about citizens, and that we care about the police, you know? And so I think those are words I have for you, is continue leading this charge and spreading awareness and getting kids your age involved, because you are the future leaders of tomorrow. And you, it's going to take conversations like this and people like you to help encourage the younger demographics to want to make a change and want to make a difference and want to take that oath. Parting words for me in terms of the community would be, love each other, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. It's biblical. And, you know, I just always try to, you know, I was very fortunate and blessed, the family I've come from, and, you know, that it's been a household of unconditional love and respect and honesty and truth. And I feel like, you know, we're in a society where some of those virtues have been lost. And I think there's somewhat of a premium and glorification on the wrong things. And I think we need to get back to traditional values and just respecting each other and honoring each other. And, you know, the golden rule, do unto others who you have others do unto you. I think we've gotten away from a lot of that. So I think it's important to be having these conversations. So thank you. And thank you for the opportunity.
Of course, I really appreciate your time. You're actually my first interview in terms of a community member that's not related to law enforcement or has any connections to law enforcement or politics. You're just an ordinary community member who wants to speak on my podcast, and you shared amazing stories. Thank you so much for your time. I'm sure the audience and listeners will really take into account what you had to say today. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And there's some community leaders here in Tampa and some local attorneys that I'd love to try to plug you into so they can get on your podcast as well. So keep up the great work. Proud of you.
Thank you. I really appreciate
always
it.
Always here if you need anything. Feel free to call.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Trust the Badge.